Welcome back to In the Moment. Richard Lake grew up in the 1950s and says it was a great time to be a kid. After seeing his father, most of his uncles, his neighbors, even his teachers serve in the military, he began to think that this could be his career path when it was his turn to serve. Well, September 1st, 1967, he enlisted in the United States Air Force. Here to expand on his story is retired Command Master Sergeant Richard Lake. Welcome to In the Moment.
Welcome. That's actually Chief Master Sergeant.
Chief Master Sergeant, I'll take that too. Thank you very much. Now, I was doing some reading on you, and I found out that when you first started, you were a fuel specialist, or a POL. Supposedly, that was supposed to stand for petroleum, oil, and lubricants. Well, it really was painting odd jobs and landscaping.
A big part of it, too.
Yeah, when you got there, you were handed a paintbrush and a tire iron. What were your thoughts?
Well, I went, instead of going to a tech school, like a lot of people did at that time, we went called DDA, or Direct Duty Assignment, to Luke Air Force Base, Arizona. And we had a big project to change out all the commercial tread tires on our fuel trucks. We had a lot of semi-trailers, too. So there was a lot of work to do, and there's always painting and other oddball stuff to do, too. So that was just part of the job. And it really was kind of a big project. I got checked out on the line and began to get out of my own refueling airplanes, and we had a pretty nice time of it. The Air Force was pretty busy at that time. We had a lot of stuff going on. The Vietnam War was kind of at its peak, and we stayed pretty busy.
I kind of know the story for the most part, but some don't. Now, this isn't what you ended up doing ultimately in your career, but did you think at that time this is what you possibly wanted to do, or did you know you wanted to expand and do something else?
Well, I was always kind of an aviation buff anyway. Spent a couple of years in the Civil Air Patrol and had a couple of orientation flights on C-119s out of a base in Hartford, Connecticut. And back in the early 70s, when I was overseas in the Philippines, the Air Force had a project called Pallets Fly, where they're trying to recruit people to fly as boom operators and gunners on B-52s. And I got intrigued with that, but I didn't really apply when I was overseas. But when I got back to the States in January 71, I was at Grissom Air Force Base, Indiana, doing the fuels deal as a shift supervisor. But then I decided I wanted to have a change and start flying. So I applied, then got accepted, and went out to Castle Air Force Base, California, got qualified, and then ended up at Ellsworth in July 72. And we flew F models out there with a gunner, flew in the tail. And then when I got here, I got checked out on the G model. Got checked out for what we had to do for flying conventional type missions, and by September 72 I was on Guam flying missions out of there to Vietnam and back.
Now, you mentioned the Philippines. I read, and this kind of made me chuckle a little bit, because I served in the Navy, so these little things you read and are true. And when you got to the Philippines, your first sergeant, or a first sergeant, said to you, "I spend all my time chasing bad guys. Do anything you want, you get caught, you get the max." Do you remember that?
That's true, and it was kind of a crazy place over there, pretty wild. People did whatever they wanted to do, and Clark was really busy. We had traffic coming in to and from, going to Vietnam and back, and it was a pretty wild place. We spent a lot of time downtown doing whatever we used to do over there. So, that really turned me against first sergeants for quite a while. Until a couple of years later, I turned out to be one and found out it was quite a bit different. But I remembered that I never implied that type of philosophy. I always tried to create a good atmosphere in the unit. We had to take care of disciplinary stuff, too, because that's a big part of the job. But it's not primarily what the first sergeant is supposed to do. But it was rewarding to do part of that. In fact, when I was in Guam again as a squadron gunner, that included a lot of first sergeant responsibilities. And at that point, I decided I wanted to cross-train to be a first sergeant, and I passed my board, which is a local interview there, and then got accepted. But then I made senior master sergeant in about June of 72, or 82 rather, and which got me assigned up to Loring Air Force Base in Maine as the wing gunner. So I never did get to do the first shirt thing, except for a couple of years as a temporary thing.
You talked about being assigned to Ellsworth in February of 1972. Talk about, if you will, the role of the B-52 in Vietnam.
They started getting involved about 1965, and then it increased over the years. Most of the D model units were only initially involved, and then in probably May or June of 1972, the North Vietnamese were starting to take a lot of offensive actions over there and threaten the South to a greater deal. So we had SAC took about half of the B-52 G-force that we had. And Ellsworth was flying Gs at the time, and ended up with about 200 of those on Guam flying conventional missions to and from Vietnam. And then, of course, it reached its peak in December of 72, when President Nixon decided they weren't making enough progress at the Paris peace talks. And then we started, on the 18th of December, started bombing Hanoi and Haiphong and mining the harbors and destroyed all their industrial bases up there and airfields, which brought them to the peace table. So we did get to fly one mission on that in a G model, which, the crew was really like to have gunners in the tail, because you could see the surface-to-air missiles launch and track their progress, and it was making it a lot easier for pilots to avoid them. But in a G model, all you had was a radar screen, so not the recommended way to go to war, but oh well. But we came through it okay, because we had a really good pilot. And that was the last time they flew Gs pretty much over Hanoi. The first 3 days was used G models almost exclusively, and they ended up losing a lot of planes because they didn't have the electric countermeasures package on board that the Ds had. And then after the third day, 8th Air Force took most of the planning away from SAC and decided to, instead of coming in to a target with the same headings and same airspeeds and altitudes, they put about 50 or so airplanes over the target at the same time from all different directions and kept the North Vietnamese pretty well confused, and it was much more effective. We did end up losing about 15 B-52s to surface-to-air missiles, and one of my classmates at Castle ended up being POW for a couple of months. But one of the great, I'm glad we did that then, because it was long overdue, I thought. We should have, back when I was a junior in high school in 65, I thought we should have, as I mentioned, we needed to bomb Hanoi. And I never thought I'd be taking part in it. But it was kind of long overdue, and it really got their attention, because generally dictatorships only understand force anyway. And it was grateful to be a part of something that got our VUWs home. Most of those guys were up there for some 6 or 7 years, including Senator McCain and others, and some were only there a few months, but I'm glad we got them home.
Now, when you enlisted in 1967, I'm not sure exactly how to ask this question, but I'm going to say you had Vietnam on the brain. Were you hoping, and that's the wrong word, but I hope you understand what I'm saying, to go to Vietnam?
I thought I'd probably end up there. As it turned out, I was over it about 85 times, but never did get stationed there. I felt I owed the country some time. It was just part of the culture at the time. I always thought I'd would enjoy a career in the military, and it turned out it worked out pretty well, because I stayed for 30 years. And as after a while, all my uncles and my father were complaining when they got older that if had they stayed in after World War II, they couldn't retire. So that's kind of stuck in my mind too. But it was a good place to be. You could assume a lot more responsibility and do more things than you probably ever could at that time in the civilian world. And I enjoyed it. It was a good career.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Chief Master Sergeant, retired Chief Master Sergeant, that is, Richard Lake, B-52 gunner. Explain what a B-52 gunner's role is.
Well, besides operating the fire control system and getting ready to defend the airplane from enemy fighters, if you flew in the tall tails and the D models, you kept an eye out for the positions in the three ship cell. There were two airplanes behind you all the time on flying missions. You watched over for any other opposing traffic on the radar screen. And in emergencies, which I ended up doing twice, we could do a thing called a bonus deal, where you could use the fire control radar to give range and address information to the airplanes behind you, so they could drop their bombs if their BNS or bomb the F system went out, which happened quite a lot. At that time, we were still, the B-52s were full of vacuum tubes, and the systems could be unreliable at times. So many times we had to talk the airplanes across the Pacific from Vietnam to Guam, plus guide them on their bomb runs too. So, but there was a lot more to it than just operating the fire control system. We had to keep an eye out on whatever else was going on. And even when flying missions out of the G model from Guam, everybody in the crew took turns giving the pilots a break. Once we got up to altitude and everything was on autopilot, we could fly the airplane to and from so the pilots could get some Z's. Because it was a long, probably about a 16-hour day from the time you got up until you got back. So we helped each other out quite a bit.
In your opinion, how has the world and even more locally, South Dakota, changed as a result of the Vietnam War?
Well, hard to say. I hope we learned some of the lessons that we taught or went through over there. You have to still keep militarily strong and avoid long entanglements. Of course, now we're still in fighting over there in the Middle East. We don't have the airplanes that we used to have. A lot of the airplanes are retired now. But we still need to keep a strong military and be responsive. We still have to keep a position of strength and ready to respond to any crisis in the world, as it always was. I remember back when in December of 79, when we had two bomb squadrons here with H model B-52s, when the ORI, or readiness inspection, hit. And this is the first time it happened. We had half of each bomb squadron got sent no notice to Guam on a deployment. And nobody had a clue it was coming, but it hit just like that and they were gone. And that started a whole series of things where all the H model bases would deploy to Guam and back. So you have to be ready for anything all the time. And you have to keep a high rate of training and keep the military up to speed and just keep a sharp eye on world events.
Retired Chief Master Sergeant Richard Lake, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your service and telling us your story today.
Yeah, thank you.